Abracadabra. Just so the nandana brajana randana. Jamuna hira vana chadi. Jamuna hira vana chadi. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari. Madhava Kunja Vihari. Gopi jana balabha girivara dadi. Gopi jana balabha girivara dadi. Yasodhanandana Brajajana Ranjana. Yasodhanandana Brajajana Ranjana. Jamuna Tiravana Chadi. Jamuna Tira Vana Chadi. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari. Madhava Kunja Vihari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari. Madhava Kunja Vihari. Jai Om Vishnupad Paramahansa Parivijagacharya Asta Tarasata Si Srimad. His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Ki. Oh, there you are. You were hiding behind the camera. Now I can see you. Okay. Could I have my... Where's the black bag? Right here. Because Wednesday is the appearance day of Lord Nrisimhadev, right? So... this evening and tomorrow evening and the next morning, next several classes will be focused on the appearance of Lord Nrisimhadev. And the subject matter of Lord Nrisimhadev's appearance comes in Canto 7. Canto 7. Canto 7 comes after Canto 6. And in Canto 6, there's a number of discussions of Lord Vishnu coming to take the side of the demigods and protecting the demigods. And so, the beginning of Canto 7, it's a discussion between Narada and Yudhisthira. And the Pandavas are also there. Narada's visiting the assembly of the Pandavas. And they're asking, first it's Shukadeva Goswami asks a question about the Canto 6 topic, and then it goes to the same question being asked by Yudhisthira to Narada. And the question is the Lord partial or impartial? There's an important verse in Bhagavad Gita. Samoham, sama, aham. I'm equal. Sama, aham. I'm equal to all. Samoham, sarva bhuteshu, all living entities. Name dvesho, there aren't those who I have dvesha towards, some bad feeling. Nor priya, I'm equal to everyone. That's Krishna's statement. But the very next is somehow he has a different position, apparently partial position, towards his devotees. So that sounds like a contradiction. And that's the contradiction, the apparent contradiction that Shukadeva Goswami is asking. And then later Yudhisthira asks Narada. So it's a philosophical question. And then, of course, the Puranic story illustrates the answer, but the answer is given before this story. First is the philosophy. So chapter 1 of Canto 7 is a prelude to this whole discussion about the appearance of Lord Nrisingadeva to come to protect Prahlad. And even in distinction, the position of, could you pour some water? The position of the devotee in of Prahlad Maharaj as the pure devotee in contrast or compared to the demigods. In other words, there's a hierarchy of purity. And Prahlad is way at the top of purity. And the demigods aren't as high as Prahlad is, which is shown in the Leela, because the demigods tried to pacify Lord Nrisingadeva and they're not successful. And immediately Prahlad is successful. Before he even speaks, the anger of Lord Nrisingadeva subsides. Because, apparently, he is partial to Prahlad in comparison to the demigods. He came, Lord Nrisingadeva appeared at the request of the demigods to protect against the demon Hiranyakashipu. So he came for them, but he came especially for Prahlad. So it's a, is he equal or is he partial question. A really short answer kind of like takes care of the whole thing in one sense. There's the feature of Paramatma, that's the Lord in the heart, Paramatma, and he's equal. And then there's the Bhagavan feature, and he's partial. That is, he sees the devotion, and he responds to the devotion, and that's very natural. It's not only human, it's personal, because he's Bhagavan is the personal feature. Another verse in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Yayatam mam prapadyante. Prapadyante means surrender. As they surrender unto me, he reciprocates. In Prabhupada's language, when someone comes as a demon, they say, you're my enemy. He says, oh, okay. You'd like me to be your enemy, then I'll be your enemy. Then he interacts with them as they regard him. And there's others that regard him as a devotee, as his devotee. Oh, you regarding me as my devotee, very well. I'll reciprocate with you in that way. In that sense, he's not inimical to the demons, although it looks like, because he defeats them in battle on behalf of the demigods, and He kills some of them, but he gives them liberation. So he gives them liberation, or he gives them liberation. But the liberation that the demons receive is not the same liberation as the devotees receive. You know the difference? I'll explain the difference. Liberation can mean different things. Liberation can just mean negation, like cessation of material suffering. Freedom from material, cessation of material activity. That's a negative. And that's one kind of liberation. It's called sayuja, or merging, becoming one with the Supreme. So some of the demons, like Arishtasura, we spoke a little bit about Arishtasura and the Brahma Vimohan Leela, the pastimes of Brahma stealing the calves and the cows, had happened on the same day as Krishna's killing of the Agasura demon, the big serpent. That serpent, the soul of the serpent, merged into the body of Krishna. Or Shishupal. You know what's Shishupal? You've heard his name? Yeah? And so his head was severed, and the soul of Shishupal merged into the body of Krishna. He achieved that kind of liberation, oneness. But that's cessation of his bad activity. But then what's on the other side of ceasing bad activity? Those are other kinds of liberations. Achieving the planet of the Lord, engaging in activities with the Lord, having opulences like the Lord, having a form like the Lord, Satchitananda, spiritual form like the Lord. And that's another kind of liberation. That's where you engaged in service with your spiritual form in relation to the Supreme Person. So, liberation can mean just negation, or liberation can mean the positive activity of the living entity. The Bhagavatam teaches us the merging with is incomplete because there's no positive activity. And the complete is engaging in loving service to the Supreme. That's complete. Incomplete, incomplete. So whether, if he kills the demon, they may merge into his existence. He releases them from their reactions of all their misdeeds, and they achieve liberation. They're free of material bondage. That's kindness. Although the external part is just as happened with Hiranyakashipu. He was killed by Lord Nrisimhadev, and he was released from sins. We hear in the story later, Prahlad says, please forgive my father. Please relieve him from the reactions of all of his misdeeds, including trying to kill me. And Lord Nrisimhadev said, well, that's already accomplished. Because of his relation with you and your pure devotion, it's already accomplished. So ask for something else because it's already accomplished. By being killed by Lord Nrisimhadev, his sins were gone. Reactions to his sins were gone. So it looks fierce, but it's giving him mercy. And over there is Prahlad, and it's another kind of mercy. But the mercy differing because of the regard that Hiranyakashipu has and the regard that Prahlad has for the same person. So he shows a different feature to the two persons. But it's merciful and merciful in both cases. So that's the topic. I'm going to read the first three verses and their purports, and we'll discuss a little bit. So Canto 7, interesting, is each of the... It's not part of the Sanskrit of the Bhagavad Purana, but Prabhupada gave each of the cantos a heading, like a title. So the heading for this canto, Canto 7, is The Science of God, How to Know Him. The Science of God begins with this philosophical question. So let's go to the question. Here we go. King Parikshit inquired, "My dear Brahmana," so Parikshit is speaking to who? Shukadeva Goswami, right? Shukadeva Goswami is the son of Vyas, who's certainly a Brahmana, so Shukadeva is also a Brahmana. "My dear Brahmana, the Supreme Personality of Godhead Vishnu, being everyone's well-wisher, is equal and extremely dear to everyone. How then did he become partial like a common man for the sake of Indra and thus kill Indra's enemies?" The previous, there was a big battle and the demigods won and Indra, Vishnu helped. "How can a person equal to everyone be partial to some and inimical towards others?" That's the question. That's the question for the whole canto. Purport. In Bhagavad Gita 9:29, the Lord says, here it is, "Samoham sarva bhuteshu name dvesho stina priyaha." Translation, "I am equal to everyone, no one is dear to me, nor is anyone my enemy." In the previous canto, however, it has been observed that the Lord sided with Indra by killing the demons on his account. He gives the Sanskrit. Therefore, the Lord was clearly partial to Indra, although he is the super soul in everyone's heart. The soul is extremely dear to everyone, and similarly the super soul is dear to everyone. Thus there cannot be any faulty action on the part of the super soul. The Lord is always kind to all living entities, irrespective of form and situation. Yet he took the side of Indra, just like an ordinary friend. This was the subject of Parikshit Maharaja's inquiry. As a devotee of Lord Krishna, he knew very well that Krishna cannot be partial to anyone. But when he saw that Krishna acted as the enemy of the demons, he was somewhat doubtful. Therefore, he posed this question to Shukadeva Goswami for a clear answer. Paragraph. A devotee, and we're trying to be devotees, cannot accept that Lord Vishnu has material qualifications. Maharaj Parikshit knew perfectly well that Lord Vishnu, being transcendental, has nothing to do with material qualities, but to confirm his conviction, he wanted to hear from the authority, Shukadeva Goswami. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, "Samasya katam vaishamyam." What's that? Since the Lord is equally disposed toward everyone, how can he be partial? "Priyasya katam asareshu priti abhava." The Lord, being the super soul, is extremely dear to everyone. Why then should the Lord display unsympathetic behavior toward the asuras? How is this impartial? Since the Lord says that he is Suradam Sarva Bhutanam, the well-wisher of all living entities, how could he act with partiality by killing the demons? These questions arose in the heart of Parikshit Maharaj, and therefore he inquired from Shukadeva Goswami. That's text one. The purports are a little shorter in the next two verses, and that's all we're going to be reading from. Text 2. Lord Vishnu himself, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is the reservoir of all pleasure. Therefore, What benefit would he derive from siding with the demigods? What interest would he fulfill in this way? Since the Lord is transcendental, why should he fear the asuras, and how can he be envious of them? These are material qualities, and he has no material qualities. So he's speaking as if he has material qualities when they're not material qualities. So it's begging the question, as they say. And Shukadeva Goswami is happy to supply the answer. Purport, we should always remember that the distinction between the spiritual and material. We should remember the distinction between spiritual and material. What is that which is material is infected by material qualities, but these qualities cannot touch that which is spiritual or transcendental. Krishna is absolute, whether he is in the material world or in the spiritual world. When we see partiality in Krishna, this vision is due to his external energy. Otherwise, how could his enemies attain salvation after being killed by him? We mentioned this, merging, becoming one with. So enemies are given liberation, devotees are given liberation. Different kind, because of different regard, but given liberation. Everyone who deals with the Supreme Personality of Godhead gradually acquires qualities of the Lord. The more one advances in spiritual consciousness, the less he is affected by the duality of material qualities. The Supreme Lord, therefore, must certainly be freed from these qualities. His enmity and friendship are external features presented by the material energy. He is always transcendental. He is absolute, whether he kills or bestows his favor. And next paragraph. Envy and friendship arise in one who is imperfect. We fear our enemies because in the material world we're always in need of help. The Lord, however, doesn't need help from anyone, for he is Atma Rama. Atmarama. Rama means pleasure, like spiritual reservoir of pleasure, Rama. And Atmarama is finding pleasure within. So when one whose pleasure is within doesn't need anything outside of themselves for contentment. But conversely, if you're not feeling pleasure within, then you're looking for something outside yourself for pleasure. That's material existence or material consciousness. So he quotes the verse, Bhagavad Gita chapter 9:26, which is just before that verse 27, the Samoham, which is, Patram pushpam palam toyam yome bhaktya prayachati tad aham bhaktyuparitam ashnami prayatatmanaha. If a devotee offers me with devotion a little leaf, a flower, fruit or water, I shall accept it. Why does the Lord say this? Is he dependent on the offerings of the devotee? He is not actually dependent, but he likes to be dependent upon his devotee. This is his mercy. Similarly, he does not fear the asuras. Thus, there is no question of partiality in the Supreme Personality of Godhead. I mean, there's a whole... The first 25 verses of this chapter is going back and forth on this topic. So we're not going to cover it threadbare in the beginning, but it's just laying the ground. Text 3. This is again Prikshit Maharaj to Sukadeva. Oh, greatly fortunate and learned Brahmana, whether Narayana is partial or impartial has become a subject of great doubt. Kindly dispel my doubt with positive evidence that Narayana is always neutral and equal to everyone. Same topic in each of these three verses. Purport. Since Lord Narayana is absolute, his transcendental qualities are described as one. Thus, his punishments and his offerings of favor are both of the same value. Essentially, his inimical actions are not displays of enmity towards his so-called enemies, but in the material field, one thinks that Krishna is favorable to devotees and unfavorable to non-devotees. When Krishna finally instructed Bhagavad Gita, Sarva dharmam parityaja mamekam sharanam braja, this is meant not only for Arjuna, but for every living entity within the universe. And that's all that we're going to read this evening. As we know from Bhagavad Gita, as old as the creation is, which is really old, there's always these two classes. Not just, you know, modern times. It's the way things are. The Suras and Asuras, the divine and demoniac. And then there's the Supreme Lord, who is equal to everyone. So he interacts with the demoniac one way, and he interacts with the divine in a different way. But it's not a partiality interaction, it's he is responding to how they regard him. And we discussed this on Sunday. I don't know if you were able to attend the Sunday class. But one of the two of the features of Lord Nrisimhadeva is he gives protection, particularly to Prahlad, but in general to those who have regard for him. And he removes obstacles on the path of devotion. There's obstacles on the path of devotion, and largely the obstacles are the obstacles inside. But sometimes there's obstacles outside, and Lord Nrisimhadeva gives protection against those obstacles. Now, I was asked to, in the course of the next few days, to read about or narrate some pastimes of Lord Nrisimhadeva in Mayapur. There's a very celebrated deity of Lord Nrisimhadeva. You seen pictures? Yeah. And he looked like, rah, because his feature is Ugra. Nrisimha. Ugra means terrible. His hands are like this, and it's just before he pounces on Hiranyakashipu. His mouth is open, his teeth are showing, his nails are extended, he's ready to, just like a cat, maybe you've seen. When I was growing up, we had a cat in the house. So when the cat is chasing something, their ears go up like this, kind of like radar. They see a mouse and they just like wait and they're ready to pounce. So that's Ugra Nrisimha. He's ready to pounce on Hiranyakashipu, but he hasn't done it yet. So he's the intensity, you feel it and see it in the deity form. But it is said that if the deity of Nrisimhadeva is worshipped side by side with another principal deity, in other words, he's not just separately being worshipped, but part of a larger set of worship, he takes on the mood of that principal deity. So certainly in Mayapur, the principal personality being worshipped is Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Therefore, Lord Nrisimhadeva in Mayapur takes on the mood of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, although he looks... So I'm going to read a couple of different pastimes in appreciation of that deity. But one of them is not even from Mayapur. It's another situation, South Africa, where the protection of Lord Nrisingadev is unbelievable. Very, very, very unique. So I was asked to do this. I'm going to do this. I had a printout, but I didn't bring the printout, so I'm just going to have to find the page for just a moment here. And then we'll see if there's some questions. This is emphasizing the merciful nature of Lord Nrisingadev and the protection of Lord Nrisingadev in some very interesting ways. There we go. Okay, this is, there's many, but this is little sections, little short stories of protection. This is written by Amoga Das. A few years ago, I presented a photo table at the Sunday feast at one of our temples. One devotee came up to the table and held a photo of Lord Nrisingadev in his hands. I encouraged him to take Lord Nrisingadev home, but he said, "Oh, if only I was qualified to worship him," and quickly walked away. He seemed afraid of Lord Nrisingadev. More recently, my daughter and her husband removed the photo of Lord Nrisingadev from their altar because they heard that some couples have been devastated by worshipping an Ugra Nrisinga deity in your home. That's this deity in Mayapur. Ugra Nrisinga is the terrifying form of the Lord standing ready to attack the demons and totally destroy them in order to save his devotee Prahlad. To worship him in his deity form, one must be strictly celibate, that's in Mayapur, the only brahmacharis. And there are many strict rules and methods of worship. One point is that having a photo of the deity on an altar is not the same as having a deity. But more importantly, Lord Nrisingadev in Mayapur is extremely merciful. When he tells the story, I'll narrate it quickly. During the time of Bhaktisiddhanta, there was some dacoits that came and attacked and his headquarters. And so he instructed that they should install the deity of Nrisingadev for protection. So when there was some attack in the ISKCON temple some decades later, the same, referring to what Bhaktisiddhanta did, they decided to install a deity of Nrisingadev to protect the campus and the devotees and the deities and everything. So they made a trip to South India to arrange for a deity to be carved by a very celebrated deity carver in South India. And on the train, one of the devotees had a dream of a form of Lord Nrisingadev in his dream. And it was very vivid. I mean, very vivid. So he described it when he woke up. He described it to the other devotees they were traveling with, and that was decided that was Lord Nrisingadev indicating he wants that form. So they described to the carver the form. And he tilted his head back and said, "Very well." So they made the deposit. And it was going to be some month later that the deity was done, because it's a very large deity. And meanwhile, some envious person somewhere in another part of South India, heard that the carver is making for ISKCON a Nrisimha deity. So he went to this carver and said, I'll pay you double what they were going to pay you. Let me have the deity. And he said, I can't do that. I'm an ethical man. But I'll tell you that this particular form they want worshipped, if they make mistakes in the worship, they're finished. He said, oh, very good. Hurry up and finish. And then the devotees came when the deity was done, and they saw the deity was awesome. And then the carver told them what happened. The envious man, they gave his name. This is what he said, this is what he did, and this is what I told him. But what I didn't tell him was when this Nrisimha is worshipped in a place where another primary deity is worshipped, he takes on the mood of the primary deity. So, because this Nrisimha would be appearing in the land of Gauranga, he would be different from the Ugra Nrisimha because he would adopt the mood of the predominating deity of that place. That mood, the mood of Lord Nityananda and Gauranga, is to forget the faults of the devotees and only see their devotion bless them with love for Krishna. It is written that Lord Nityananda and is Lord Balaram plus mercy. He's not different from Lord Balaram, yet he's different from Lord Balaram because of his unprecedented mercy upon the fallen souls. In fact, the abode of Nittai Gauranga is called Odarya. You heard that term before? Mercy, it means. So, Vaikuntha is Aishwarya, Braja is Madhurya, sweetness, opulence, sweetness, and mercy, Odarya, the abode of Lord Chaitanya, which means it manifests mercy upon the devotees regardless of their faults. In a similar way, Lord Nrisimhadev at ISKCON Mayapur is none different than Ugra Nrisimha, yet he's very different than Ugra Nrisimha because of his unprecedented mercy. Therefore, I have started a webpage with the title, Merciful Nrisimhadev. Careful study of the pastimes here will give the realization that this Mayapur Nrisimhadev is extremely kind and merciful to all. And then he tells some stories. After we offered a night set of clothing to a merciful Nrisimhadev a few years ago, Jananivas Prabhu, that's the head pujari, sat down with my wife and myself in the temple. He told us that Lord Nrisimhadev derives ecstasy from serving Gauranga by helping devotees in his Sankirtan movement. I pondered the idea of one form of the Lord serving another, Nrisimha serving Gauranga. Isn't it true that Lord Balaram manifests Krishna's shoes, umbrella, and other paraphernalia to serve him? Isn't it true that Lord Nityananda serves Gauranga and Advaita Acharya serves them all? I had often thought about the photographs I make of merciful Nrisimhadev, feeling that his face reveals not anger but a huge ecstatic smile. When in Chandan Yatra, when they cover the deity in sandalwood, you see it. It's a big smile. But if you don't see it otherwise, it's just gnashing teeth and looks like something else. Hearing Jananivas's words confirmed that feeling, his eyes may reveal a deep ecstasy on the level of enjoyment of the Supreme Lord in interesting meditation. As stated in the following, and stated in the accounts that follow, quote, although very ferocious, the lion is very kind to her cubs. Similarly, although very ferocious to non-devotees like Hiranyakashipu, Lord Nrisimhadev is very, very gentle and kind to his devotees like Prahlad Maharaj. Lord Nrisimhadev appeared to a devotee to say, There's no need to fear me. Please give up this fear. We should take this to heart and not fear this most unusual form of Lord Rishingadeva residing in Lord Gauranga's abode. Worshipping him will bring love and protection, not devastation. So there's many stories, but I'm going to just read a few. Lord Nrisingadev's pujari had a very startling dream in which, in his dream, the director of the temple called him and told him to bring some diesel fuel, saying, "We're going to sacrifice Lord Nrisingadev." "You are going to what?" The pujari replied, "Yes, we're going to sacrifice Lord Nrisingadev." "You can't do that." This is in the dream. "This is crazy. Just bring the diesel fuel, will you?" "Okay, I'll bring the diesel fuel, but I don't want anything to do with this. It doesn't make any sense." That was in the dream. After some time, the pujari returned to the temple and was totally shocked in his dream to see that everything had become completely burned by a great fire and that all remained of the deity was his feet and ankles. That was in the dream. Early the next morning, he approached the chief pujari and asked if he could explain the meaning of the terrible nightmare. After thinking for a while, he began to smile and said, "Oh, yes. Yesterday was the start of Jaladan. That's a festival of dripping water on the Shalagram Shilas for 1 month. Because at the feet of Lord Nrisingadev, there's many Shilas. But we forgot to observe it. Therefore, Nrisingadev is letting you know that he is burning up and you should immediately begin Jaladan," which we did. Hit pastime two. Once Lord Nrisingadev's worship was going on as usual, when the pujari noticed that one flower fell from Nrisingadev's garland, the pujari turned and asked the visitors if anyone was offering any special prayers to Lord Nrisingadev. The visitors in front did not say anything, but from the back, one lady came forward with tears in her eyes. She said, "My daughter got married about 4 or 5 years ago and she has no issue. The people in my son-in-law's house considered inauspicious, so I was praying to Nrisingadev that he might help her in her desperate situation." Then the pujari said, "Your prayer is granted. The symptom is that this flower fell from Nrisingadev's garland. Please take this and keep it nicely. You can wash this flower and give the water to your daughter to drink." Then the lady left, and later the pujari forgot the incident. After 1 year, the same devotee, along with her daughter, son-in-law, and newborn baby, came smiling to Nrisingadev. She reminded the pujari about the prayer she made 1 year back, as a result of which her daughter gave birth to a very nice baby boy, whom they named Prahlad. And once again, they offered a very nice puja to Lord Nrisingadev. Maybe it's coincidental, right? Pastime three. One of our Namahata devotees, Kalyanit Dasi, has two daughters, gives the names of them both. Both of them are married, and they have grown-up children. They both live in the same city, Berhampur. Once, the husband of Pratibha fell extremely sick and was in coma, near to death. Along with the other relatives, the younger sister, Anubha, that's the sister of the one who was in a coma, or whose husband was in a coma, was also in great anxiety about her brother-in-law's situation. She went to the hospital. And as she was a devotee, she prayed to Lord Nrisingadev to help her brother-in-law. She came home and went to bed with a heavy heart. At the end of the night, she had a dream in which Lord Nrisingadev came near to her and told her, "Don't worry, your brother-in-law is okay." And then her dream broke. In the morning, the news came from the hospital that the patient was doing well. The saline drip and oxygen had both been removed, and he was now able to talk. There's more. There was a fight in a village. And in the course of the fight, one person was attacked with acid, and as a result of which, his whole face was burned and terribly disfigured. The sight of one of the eyes was completely lost, and the other eye had only about 10% vision. The doctors said that the remaining eye, through which he had 10% vision, would also go blind very soon. They suggested taking the patient to Vellore in South India for further treatment to see if they could do something about it. At that time, a devotee who was there suggested they should pray to Lord Nrisingadev for recovery of his eyes. As a result, they prayed to Lord Nrisingadev at Mayapur. The next day, much to the doctor's surprise, it was found that the patient could see everything very nicely. Coincidence, right? Pastime 5. One Russian lady used to make tulsi garlands for Nrisingadev every day. Being pleased with her, Nrisingadev's pujari gave her one of Lord Nrisingadev's false fingernails as prasad, deity prasad. She took it and kept it with her. That night, she had a dream in which she saw that Lord Nrisingadev had come to her and was sitting on her bed. The Lord then put his fingers with long nails inside her heart and pulled out something black and said, "You see this? This is not love, it's lust. And there is still more here. What shall I do with it?" In her dream, she could not reply, and the dream broke. The next day, she went before Lord Nrisingadev and asked him to throw it far away. There's more, but I'm going to go to a very interesting one. So many, like, there's many, many pages. But here's a child hit by a truck. This is from South Africa. 10 years ago in South Africa, there was an experience with a father and her daughter who experienced this event, told the story to my friend, a sannyasi and devotee of Lord Nrisingadev. This story was also published in the local newspapers, and several witnesses of the truck accident after this incident became devotees of Lord Nrisingadev. Here's what happened. A simple Vaishnav family living in the country, they had a 5-year-old daughter. The girl was a fan of Nrisingadev. She found him simply funny, as he looked half man, half lion, and she felt very attracted to him. She often told her playmates about her favorite god, a lion, and the kids always wondered, what kind of god could be a lion? What can a 5-year-old girl know about God? She wasn't initiated. The father of the family followed some other guru and later accepted initiation, but there was a small Hindu community in that village that they were in touch with. One day, the girl was playing outside with her ball together with other kids along the side of the street. The ball rolled onto the street and the girl ran after her precious ball. There was usually no traffic, a rarely used country road, but this time a very fast truck came swiftly down the road. The girl, in her play, didn't see the truck coming. The father was on the first floor of their house and saw his young girl running on out to the street. He also saw the huge truck coming close to his daughter with fast speed. The father yelled at her, but she didn't hear him. So he jumped out of the window of this first floor to save his daughter and broke both his legs and remained laying on the ground in pain. He had to watch how his little girl was hit by the truck and thrown through the air some 20 meters away. All children and neighbors around who observed this froze. The father later said that his only desire when he saw this was to die. From the other direction came a police car that also witnessed the accident. The truck went on, and the policeman stopped his police car across the street. The truck driver hardly stopped his truck, and he seemed to be drunk. The policeman immediately called the ambulance and ran over to the motionless girl laying on the grass. The closest hospital was a small private clinic. The ambulance came but refused to take the girl, being afraid they wouldn't have the necessary equipment to help the injured girl, help the injuries the girl must have. They advised the policeman to call the main hospital, as only they could have the efficiency, only they could efficiently help her, as her spine must be broken, etc. The policeman was in despair, not even knowing where the father of the girl was. Actually, he didn't even know if the girl was still alive, and he didn't dare to touch her, not knowing how injured she was. However, in the end, she was brought to the right hospital. The policeman accompanied the girl, and also finally the father was there, I guess with his two broken legs. The chief doctor heard then what happened to the girl, and they immediately x-rayed her to see first results. The policeman wanted to rest assured how the girl was doing and waited there to see the results. Everyone was shocked to hear what a terrific accident had happened to this young girl. The nurse brought the x-ray pictures to the doctor, who became very upset and started yelling at the nurse that she should, for God's sake, bring the right pictures. This was about life and death. He threatened to fire her. It was unacceptable to make such mistakes. The nurse was scared and didn't understand what was happening. Those were the pictures of the 5-year-old girl that was hit by the truck. The nurse wasn't aware yet of what had happened to the girl. She just brought x-rays. The doctor said, "This cannot be, for on the x-ray there was not a single broken bone." The doctor all the time, again and again, repeated, "Impossible, it can't be." Then suddenly the girl awoke from her faint and told the story at full consciousness, which made its way into the media. Here's the story. The very moment she picked up the ball from the street, she saw the truck coming up towards her. The only thing she could do was yell out for help. She didn't call for mommy or daddy, but for her, Nrisinghe Dev. In this moment when the truck should have hit her, she suddenly saw Nrisinghe Dev pick her up from the ground, smile at her and said, "Don't be afraid, nothing will happen to you." The girl continued her story. The Lord put her on the other side of the street into the grass. But when putting her down, he accidentally scratched her waist, which hurt her a bit. She spoke about how beautiful Nrisinghe Dev was, his hair, his eyes, etc. But his claws are very sharp. He should cut his nails. He wore a golden dhoti, etc. The doctor didn't understand anything and told the policeman she was in shock and hallucinating, which is normal. So the girl was profoundly checked for any injuries, but the only injury they found on her body were those scratches. And the doctor said, "This must be from a wild animal like a lion." And because he had seen cases like this before. So he was disturbed and asked if they had brought the right girl to the hospital, as this girl was injured by a wild animal, not a truck. Nobody was clear about what happened. The same doctor and the nurse who took care of her later became devotees, as they learned from the parent who that lion was. Then there's the writer is making his comments. You know, these are stories in Mahabharata, but this is a modern one. He protects his devotees that sincerely worship him in their hearts. I'm sure this little girl was no common soul. Who knows what she did in her previous life? the sannyasi heard that she very much liked to eat sweets and prepared a big plateful of sweets for her to rest assured she will not be able to eat it all up. He gave her the mountainous plate of sweets. She took some sweets and ran out playing with her friends. As soon as she was gone from the room, the sannyasi went over to that table and took the rest. Mahaprasadam. Because he was in a Sringa Bhakta. It doesn't say where in South Africa, but it's not apparently not an ISKCON young girl, ISKCON family. The person that's writing this is Shyam Gopal. That's a Hare Krishna devotee name. Shyam Gopal Prabhu. But Lord Nrisimhadev is very merciful. He gives us protection and removes obstacles. And not just, you know, in seventh canto Bhagavatam. And there's many, many, many more. So we'll continue tomorrow evening. More pastimes of Lord Nrisimhadev. So any discussion on our topic this evening? Samoham Sarvabhuteshu. Yeah.
So, well, thank you so much for coming to this home and blessing us with this lecture. Me and my family, we are very grateful to you. Can I ask two questions? Coincidentally, I read entire canto last 2 days, just the text. But can I ask questions that are not from this chapter?
Sure.
Well, one question is from Bhagavatam. The other question is my own dilemma that I've been having for years. So every time when I do the Narsingadeva Arati in the morning or at the temple, I've observed the mood always is glorification of Lord Narsimha. Or whenever there are challenges in life, I pray to him. And the mood always is requesting for protection or mercy. But I've tried this either naturally or artificially. I don't feel that mood of love towards Lord Narsimha or even dependency. Even though I ask for protection, I feel that dependency sometime from Mahaprabhu or Krishna, but not from Lord Narsimha. So I always wonder what's wrong with me.
I don't think there's necessarily something wrong with you. Why do you feel that there's something wrong with you?
Because I'm seeking protection, but I never feel dependency. It's more with Lord Krishna or with...
Well, wait a minute. Protection but not dependency. How are those two separated? Protection... Here's a small child, and there's his father or mother. And the small child is looking to father and mother for protection. So how's that?
Well, that's where I'm, that's the dilemma, right? I always feel that Krishna will protect me, Mahaprabhu will take care of me. But when I pray in challenges, I pray to Lord Narsimha always.
Well,
that's a dilemma.
Krishna and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, one answer is, they are avatari, the source of all avatars. And so within Lord Chaitanya and within Krishna, Nrisimhadev's feature is also there. It's already there. It's a subset of something that they have. They have everything. So the aspect of protection is especially pronounced in Lord Nrisimhadev. So to pray to him for protection, that's appropriate because he wants to give it and he has the power to give it. But that power to give it is also within Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So I don't think it's wrong. It's part of our training in one sense. we take shelter of Lord Nrisimhadeva when there's need for protection, because immediately he's ready. And that's Krishna and Lord Chaitanya as well. It comes in a different form, but that's Lord Chaitanya and Krishna as well.
Thank you,
Maharaj. So I don't think you need to adjust anything.
Okay. Thank you. That helps. So can I ask my second question? And I think, I can't remember the chapter. I think it's chapter 12 or 11.
Of the seventh canto. Okay.
When Lord Brahma glorifies Lord Narasimha, all the demigods who are there, they glorify Lord Brahma. And I think before or after Prahlad Maharaj glorifies him, there is one text where Lord Narasimha tells to Lord Brahma that you should not give such blessings to the demons.
Yes, correct.
And believe it or not, I read that 4 times. For some reason, I felt very nice after reading that text. Very nice that, okay, wow, Lord did mention this to Lord Brahma, because I've always wondered, you know, in the Vedic times, there have been so many battles just because some exalted personality got mad and cursed someone or blessed someone. So all these battles and wars have been because of that, right? So first time I read in Bhagavatam that Lord actually said something to Lord Brahma, and I felt very nice. But and it's maybe it's an imaginary question, so I don't know if you have read in scriptures, but the next verse doesn't talk about Lord Brahma's response. I've always imagined in my heart what might Lord Brahma have said to Lord Narasimha. Sorry, or is there any scripture reference? And also second part is, after this incident or after this whole pastime, did Lord Brahma bless someone else with similar things?
Yes. Ravana.
Ravana.
Brihat Bhagavatamrita. You familiar with that title?
Sorry, could you repeat that?
Brihat Bhagavatamrita.
No.
It's a 3-volume set of books published by the BBT, translated by Gopi Pranadana Prabhu and his team under the BBT supervision. And it's written by Sanatan Goswami, and it has 2 parts. And in the first of the 2 parts, Narada goes to different persons seeking who is the greatest recipient of the mercy of the Lord. And when he goes to Lord Brahma, he says, "You're the greatest recipient." He said, "No, no, no. Even Lord Nrisimhadeva instructed me, because I did the wrong thing. I gave a benediction to Rani Kashipu, and then I did it again." So you can read in the commentary. It's a part of Vedabase, because it's a BBT publication. The commentary, because Sanatan wrote the text and he also wrote commentary to his text. So you can read in the commentary what his contemplations and all of that. It's interesting. I can't remember it offhand at the moment. Brihat Bhagavatamrita, part 1. Narada goes to Brahmaloka and meets Lord Brahma. Well, it may very well be something like he said after the Brahma Vimohan Leela. You know, I'm covered in ignorance, and I acted foolishly. What Brahma did, stealing, so, you know, punish me as you feel is appropriate. But I don't want to budge an inch from Tatenu Kampam Susamikshamano, that verse. It's in Brahma's prayers. Read that verse. You can look it up. It's 10:14:8. Famous verse. And that's likely how he replied. "I'll accept responsibility for my mistake, but I don't want to budge an inch from your lotus feet in serving you."
Thank you, Maharaj. It's very helpful.
Okay.
This is Govinda Mohini Madhuri's question. Having this tendency of forgetfulness of Krishna,
Can you turn the speaker this way? Okay, keep going.
Having the tendency of forgetfulness of Krishna, also understanding Maya is very strong, that will try to take me away from Krishna sometimes.
Not sometimes.
Causes fear of fall down. Hearing Lord Narsingadev's protection and his sweet pastimes helps to calm down this fear. Lord's protection is always there, but what can I do from my side to stay protected?
To stay protected, it's negative and positive. Recognize we're in a risky situation, being in the material world. It's not exactly fear, but be cautious. Like, let's say, you know, you're getting in your car and, you know, you fasten your seatbelt and you stay within the speed limit and you stop at stop signs and stop lights and, you know, you not just get to from A to B, but you do defensive driving because there's lots of car accidents out there. So you take precaution. So now similarly, you're living your life and there's risk of falling prey to Maya. So it's good to be in this, you know, the flashing yellow light. You're exercising caution because it's a risky place we're traveling through. But at the same time, that's the, you know, the caution side and the positive side. I'll be protected. It's not like we, you know, run out into the street when a truck is coming to chase a ball and think, well, Lord Narsingadev is going to come and pick me up. We don't act cavalier and foolish. But at the same time, the protection, oversight of the Supreme Lord is always going to be there. We should be sure of that. So that's the negative and the positive, the caution side and the positive shelter-taking side. Just practice. Live your life like that.
This is the Kirti Prabhu. Thank you so much, Maharaj, for the pastimes of Lord Narsingadev of Mayapur, sweetened by your rendition. Is it right understanding that the Supreme Lord is equal to all living entities in vision, but differentiates in his dealings?
Yes. Yes. That's right. He reciprocates with how they regard him. That's differences in dealings. Not everybody gets picked up when they, you know, a truck is coming barreling at them. He's specific according to the dealings of his devotee.
This is Prema Manjari Mataji. Is it okay to keep Lakshmi Narsingadev deity without any other deities on the altar? We have Mayapur Radha Madhava and Gaur Nithai pictures on the altar. We do regular offerings. One of my godbrother gave Lakshmi Narsinga deity for one of the occasions in their home. Is there any specific way to worship Lakshmi Narsingadev?
Well, the first question is, it's okay. Yes, it's okay. And a special way to worship, I think you should ask those who really like Narsinga worship to see if there's something special about Narsinga worship. And there's multiple devotees that really like Lord Narsingadev. You know, where does she live? Well, there's different Prema Manjaris. So, find out somebody local. And if you don't know somebody local, Jagatananda worships Narsingadev and Satyasar worships Narsingadev. And Indradumna Maharaj worships Narsingadev. Huh? Okay. Okay. Go ahead.
And this is Hari Prabhu from Boston. Isn't it an arrangement of the Lord Himself to cause Brahma to super bless the Ravana, Hiranyakashipu, etc., so that Lord would incarnate to kill them and return them as Jaya Vijaya?
Intuitively, it makes sense, but I'm trying to recall if I've read that anywhere, and I don't recall reading it anywhere. It's intuitively sensible.
This is Sri Radhika Mataji. There are many religions that are based on miracle cures.
Mm-hmm.
Miracle cures are very attractive to persons seeking material benedictions from
yes.
being religious.
Yes.
When sharing such miracles of Lord Narasingha with others, is it important to stay focused on the part on the fact that bhakti does not aim for a miracle cure? Is it a disservice to provide such carrots to those who will be attracted to them?
One of the points of emphasis that's made specific for Narasingadev is that even people that are materialistic, it's not just mixed devotion, it's mainly mixed, not so much devotion. He's very merciful anyways, because it's his nature to be very merciful. And mercifulness, not just miracle cure, but mercifulness is attractive quality that inspires shelter taking. Like, one of the stories that was read was a lady that made garlands for Lord Narasingadev, and she did it for a long time, and the reciprocation was one of the items of paraphernalia of the deity, and then the reciprocation that came from Lord Narasingadev in a dream. So, and who can say what that is? But it's for those who are committed devotees, already absorbed in bhakti, like this pujari, assistant of the pujari making garlands, that the bhakti is already there, and there's a certain kind of reciprocation with the devotee. It's not just a miracle cure. But some people, I understand her point. We want to emphasize bhakti, and some people don't get bhakti. They get, they want the benediction. And Lord Narasingadev is kind to those people too. It's his merciful nature. It's just his merciful nature.
So, what is the difference between miracle cures of mundane religion and Lord Narasingadev's protection?
Well, miracle cures of other religions and the miracle cures of Lord Narasingadev, besides his protection. Protection is not the same as the miracle cure part. So maybe she wants to reword her question while we go on to the next.
So Radha has two questions.
Hmm. Radha is a young girl. Again, her age is 9. 7 or 8?
That's what I think.
Okay, 7 or 8. At context.
First question is, Lord Narasingadev promised Prahlad that he will liberate Hiranyakashipu. But then Hiranyakashipu takes 2 more births as a demon. How do I understand this?
Well, liberation, that's a good question. Thank you, Radha. That liberation meant freed from the reactions of his past misdeeds. That's the negation part that we spoke about a little bit earlier. He was relieved, that kind of liberation. All the reactions of all of his terrible sinful activities were gone. That kind of liberation. But he hadn't taken shelter of the personality of Godhead, and so another birth. Second question.
I felt inspired hearing the story of 5-year-old girl. My question is, if I face difficult situations, should I be calling my mom or dad or not rushing?
I think it depends on the situation. It also depends on consciousness, because her calling was not manipulative. It wasn't calculated. It was just her heart. Yeah. Radha asks tricky questions.
She thinks to choose 9 years.
9?
This is Amara Mataji's question. I was reading translations from Canto 7, Chapter 1 with my son and explaining how Lord is supremely merciful that He gives liberation even to demons. His response was that He knew that they were Jaya and Vijaya. Then I explained how they were destroying everything and torturing everyone. Then his response was, because they were demons, else this Leela won't happen. How can I explain him better about the merciful nature of the Lord?
I think you did a pretty good job. Your son is just very clever.
And this is Chandana Mataji's question, not directly related to Narsingadev. In Bhagavad Gita 2.5 and others, while Arjuna is perplexed about whether he should fight, he thinks about various reasons, like how can he kill his teacher's grandfather, etc. He even shows apparent detachment by being willing to beg for a living, rather than tainting everything with his kinsman's blood. It turns out, though, that the detachment was centered around him and not Krishna. Hence, it was not right. At my level, I try to cultivate detachment in my path toward the goal of slowly attaching myself to Krishna. How do I understand if it is all centered around me or Krishna as I intend to?
Well, a few things. You can assume reasonably that we're centered on ourselves. Somewhere in there is Krishna in the picture, but largely we're centered on ourselves. So that's a fairly safe, assumption to start with. And then the degree to which we're fixed on Krishna's interest, you go on either side of the spectrum. What if there's something I don't like, but I know that it's pleasing to Krishna? Or the other way, something I like, but Krishna doesn't like. So, how are we going to stay in the middle of the road? How are we going to stay the course when I'm, personally I'm feeling I'm not really particularly attracted to such and such, but it's pleased, like, say, rising early or cleanliness or something, overcoming anger or something. I know what's pleasing to Krishna, and I'm just governed by what's pleasing to Krishna. Or do we get a pinch, and do we say ouch, or do we say whatever is the cost of pleasing Krishna, that inconvenience is fine with me. So that those are some tests. When difficulty comes, where is your attention going? Problem solving, or taking shelter of Krishna, looking to Krishna for intelligence how to address the situation best for his pleasure?
It is from Jayanti Balakrishnan. Beautiful class Maharaj, knew so many effects of Narasimha Dev. Taking the mood of the principal deity of the temple was very interesting to hear, and because of your mercy, and I understood this. Thank you very much. And Radha Vallabha Prabhu asked the question. Dear Guru Maharaj, we have observed elevated devotees fixed in their conscious connection even with poor health condition or personal crisis. Is that fixed consciousness in crisis a form of protection of Lordship?
Well, it's a form of spiritual strength for sure. And with that spiritual strength, behind the spiritual strength, there's determination to be an instrument of the Lord's pleasure, the Lord's service. So you can't, that's not exactly protection, but it's certainly protection. Spiritual well-being is a form of protection. Yeah. It's a different way of looking at what protection is, that's all I'm saying. We're done.
Yes.
Okay. Last chance out there. Anything?
Maharaj, how do we bring in the mics?
How do we?
Maharaj, in our day-to-day activities, there is always, at least I feel, there is always an inertia in progressing, you know, higher and higher and making progress towards Krishna consciousness. Like if I'm chanting 8 rounds, I'm at 8 rounds for so many months. I don't, you know, I want to go to the next level, but there is always some inertia. Or if I'm doing certain things like offering or something, I want to do more, but I always experience this inertia. How do, Maharaj, can you please guide me on how to overcome this inertia and have that motivation, that hankering for making process, progress?
Excellent question.
I know I'm missing so many things. Like,
but it's not just you, it's all of us. Because we had, she wants to hand you the microphone. Okay. So we had I invite you to listen to the recordings of Acceptance and Progress. It was a whole Gita Nagari retreat. That was the theme, Acceptance and Progress. And the acceptance part was, this is where I am. Just like what you just said, that's an acceptance part. Then the progress part is, I want to go further. I'm not going to pretend to myself or to others that I am something that I'm not. That's delusion. It's self-delusion or deluding others. Deception. So be honest. And then, you know, the question of go further. So the Bhaktivinoda Thakur, just add to your question, Bhaktivinoda Thakur says or writes that one's position in the yoga ladder can be defined by the state that they are. However, if it's they're engaged in bhakti, it's always dynamic and they're going further and further. So each of us should always be eager to go further and further. Otherwise, we'll stagnate. So he's agreeing. So, but the impetus is go further. So now how to go further rather than complacency or be stuck or something, you know, not taking the next step. That you want to take the next step, that's the biggest factor. However, not just you, but conditioned souls are a little, you know, we like our comfort zone. And it takes a little bit of stretching to go out of your comfort zone. Something like yoga. You ever done yoga or see yoga being performed? So it's not just sit so you're comfortable. You stretch a little bit and hold it. And then back. Or physical therapy. There's a little bit and then back. And you continue to do that and continue to do that. And with physical therapy, the harmed muscle becomes normal again just by repeated and repeated. The physical therapist that I was seeing said, the test for me is when it hurts, you stop. But, you know, a little bit of stretch, little bit, then the flexibility. So that's how. Just find something. This is the level. And don't, like, make too long of a list. Just, you know, a short, doable list of this is something that I think is reasonable for me to do. And then you commit to do it and you stay with it. And just stay with it for some substantial period of time. A real good chanting of rounds is a good thing. You know, set a period of time that for this many months I'm going to keep this standard for you till you're up to 18 or 16 rounds. So then I'm going to add one round or two rounds every quarter or every something. Or whatever it is, every Janmashtami or whatever birthday or something. And just hold yourself to that. Something that's good to help in this department is Ekadasi. You take some vrata on Ekadasi. You're going to do, this is my normal. And on Ekadasi, I'm going to do this much above my normal, whatever that, reading, chanting, hearing something. And it comes every 2 weeks and then you get used to that. In the month of Damodar, it's right in Nectar Devotion. Some, just in principle, can be something really small, but do it every day for a month. I mean, many people, it's just kind of like an ISKCON thing, we sing the Damodarastakam prayers and offer a lamp. And that's nice. You know, if we can do that for a month, what else can we do for the next month and for a year? So it's taking something and sticking with it is good. And that'll help you get out of this complacency zone. Those are some things. And make a commitment and hold yourself accountable to somebody. That's another one. Can you please check in on me? Can I report to you every, whatever it is, once a week, how I did with my commitment? You know, it's a doable commitment, and, you know, I know that I'll get distracted from my commitment. So can I be accountable to you? And this, you just say or little charge or something. It's the starting point is the desire to go the next step, and then the doable step and stay with it. Association with others that have that spirit and they're, you know, accepting and kind. Just like you do with your kids, I'm sure. know, mothers or parents are like that. They want to see their children, you know, nice and good character and, you know, some area of improvement, and you support that little area of improvement like that. So somebody that you hold yourself accountable to, a good association, and they'll help you. It's very important principle in spiritual life, Sadhu Sangha. You have something? Yeah, okay.
Sri Radhika Mataji's question. In reference to the verse that states that we should approach Krishna, whatever we are, akama, sarvakama, or mokshakama, there is a tendency to approach the Lord for protection on a bodily platform and for protection of my materially comfortable situations. Is it in my striving for a position of greater purity that the desire for protection will move from me-centered to whatever you want, my Lord? My doubt is that if I keep praying for protection on this material platform, how will that shift happen?
Slowly. But if one feels protected, then the shift is natural. If one is protected and feels that protection, even when there's some difficulty, I still feel protected. That, you know, that's the advancement that one is looking for. You know, different persons have different coverings and different needs and so forth. The direct approach is direct, and there's an indirect approach, and that can also be very beneficial, depending on someone's position, as I'm making the comment, how they're covered. They may not have the capacity to go direct, but you go indirect, and it may be a little slower and indirect, but it can help you get there. You know, the direct approach is superior. And so is it possible? Yes, it's possible to evolve to that stage, even through the indirect approach. Look at Dhruva. He wanted a, you know, super kingdom. He was very motivated by that material impetus. Okay, I'm going to end with this. I'm going to ask our two younger generation persons here to share something that you heard this evening, either about the equanimity of Lord Vishnu towards everybody, or something about Lord Nrisingadeva in particular and his merciful, protective nature, something that you'll carry with you till, you know, the next few days, thinking about something that you heard.
I learned that Lord Nrisingadeva is like very loving to his devotees, and he'll protect them at all costs. And that's what I want to, and I want to start loving him more.
Good.
For the next few days.
Okay.
And forever.
Okay. Well, let's do the next few days. That's a good start.
Like when I was younger, we would hear the story about Chand Kazi a lot. So then when you spoke about Lord Nrisingadeva treating demons versus devotees differently. It made me start thinking about that more. So I think I have a new appreciation for that story. Yeah, and I will definitely, I feel like I've learned from that a lot.
Good. He opened his shirt and showed the claw marks on his chest. I'll spare you this time, but don't do this again.
Yeah.
Protecting his devotee. Okay, thank you for that. That was nice. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.